This is 2UE Nights with Murray Wilton, and it's good to have your company on this Thursday right through to midnight tonight. There was an article floating around the other day by Leon Gettler, and it was about managing the workplace. And we all work, whether we're a manager or whether we're an employee or we might even be an employer. And there is a fine line in managing a workplace, especially today. It says in the article that the right amount of stress can actually improve work performance. But, and there's always a but, if people's anxiety levels become too high, it interferes with their ability to work effectively. Now, in short, the article went on to say that if somebody is stressed and then the boss decides that they would like to try and sit down and talk to them and try and allow them to manage their work more efficiently, that can be perceived by some people as bullying. Now, I've got to say to you, I think the word of the year is bullying. If you even make a comment, as some employers will know, to your employees and ask them to do something, they can always turn around and say, oh, you're nothing but a bully. Now, that can have dramatic ramifications for anybody that employs people. Well, look, there is that fine line. One lady that probably knows the line better than most is Leanne Faraday-Brash. Of course, she is an organisational psychologist, author, and founder of Brash Consulting. And I'm happy to say that she joins us on the line. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Murray. How are you doing?
Yeah, really well. Good to talk to you. I have to say to you, I think the word bully, in a lot of circumstances, it is justified. But I also think it's used quite loosely.
Yes, it's really, really challenging for us these days. In one sense, and I've just written a little piece on this myself, you know, is bullying sort of like anorexia nervosa? Is there more of it than there ever used to be? Or just do we have a name for it? Are people more conscious of it? Are we hypervigilant about it? Where does it start and finish? I think in a general sense, there's probably less bullying than there used to be 10, 15, 20 years ago, where a lot of managers were very autocratic, very tough. You know, if you were found leaning against a broom in manufacturing on a Friday after the managers had had a long boozy lunch 20 years ago, they could give you the flick and give you the don't come Monday without so much as a buy your leave. And I'm sure that very little of that happens these days, and even if it did, you wouldn't get away with it. But the challenge we've got is that because of this economic environment, because there are a lot of organisations running lean and managers just genuinely understand they need to make their people accountable, there'll be a percentage of people out there who, for a whole host of reasons, aren't coping very well or aren't used to getting that feedback. And then because they genuinely feel stressed or pressured, even if the managers handled it quite reasonably, they will allege they're being bullied. And then it's on for young and old.
So is there a fine line between being bullied or the perception that you're being bullied and the boss asking you to pull your finger out?
I don't actually think it's a fine line, but I think that it's very easy for people to become confused,
right,
or to say that they're confused, sort of to feign confusion. You know, the bottom line for me is, and I investigate these sorts of issues all the time, and I must say it takes no prisoners. Both parties are suffering, and the manager may not have done anything wrong. But the question I always ask myself and benchmark that against the legal definition is, has the manager taken reasonable action in a reasonable way? Now, if hypothetically that particular worker has done a lackluster job for a very long time or is in the twilight of the career or would love to be climbing Mount Kilimanjaro but hasn't got the money to do it and really would like to be somewhere else, any suggestion by the manager that they ought to be doing more or ought to be doing better may not be very popular. Now, that doesn't necessarily...
God, we're all victims, aren't we?
Yeah, so that doesn't mean, you know, I'm sticking up for the manager tonight. Normally, I'm not, Murray. It doesn't mean the manager's done anything wrong. They've just said, we're running with fewer people than we used to. We can't afford to carry anyone. Everyone has to do their bit. I need more from you. And then the person might say, well, this is a whole lot more than anyone asked of me in the past. And that might be true, but it doesn't mean the manager has been aggressive, that the manager has tried to put them under stress, that the manager has set them up to fail, that the manager is necessarily treating them more harshly than anyone else, or that the manager's done something that a reasonable person would say constitutes a risk to the person's health and safety. And that's how you define bullying.
Okay, then. All right. Okay. Just a quick sideline. As a manager, how on earth do you determine within your own mind that the workload that an employee has is high or low? Can you base that on how efficient you are as a manager? If you're able to complete a task in 30 minutes, but it took your employer or employee an hour and a half, would it be fair to say, now listen, I think you really need to get it together because you're just wasting too much time and you're not efficient enough? Is that fair to do that?
I think it's absolutely fair to ask someone to do a reasonable day's work for a reason.
But what is a reasonable day's work?
Well, you've probably got to anchor your decision against a few things.
Right.
Ask a manager who might be highly skilled and experienced and motivated.
Yes.
How long it takes them to do a task, and then expect their people to necessarily do the same thing. Maybe totally fair if the other person is experienced.
Right.
And skilled, or it may be grossly unfair.
Right.
Sometimes managers get themselves into trouble because it's not about the person's throughput, how much they get done in that amount of time. It's the person's willingness to stay back and to skip lunch and never have any social chit-chat. And the manager might be on twice the salary, might see a real career for themselves, but they've got someone reporting through to them who works to live, doesn't live to work, and the manager actually imposes their degree of motivation and forget on the worker and forgets the fact that the worker's on a whole lot less money.
Look, I understand where you're coming from, but you got to admit there are people that are employed, and let's just use some sort of hypothetical situation which would never occur, but just to say you've got 100 pieces of A4 paper in front of you. And they're on the left-hand side of you. And your job to that day is to move them to the right-hand side of the desk. The boss will come along and pick up the whole pile and go, bang. Some workers will do it sheet by sheet.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people haven't had the training, in which case that really is the organisation's responsibility to train them properly. But if the manager can say, I've trained this person properly, I'm observing this person as they work and they're spending a whole bunch of time on social media, or there's lots of idle chit-chat, or they're very reactive and whatever anyone piles on their desk, they immediately start working on something else and they forget what they were there to do and keep missing deadlines, then it's perfectly reasonable for the manager to pull them up respectfully and say, I hear that you're saying you haven't had enough time to get through that, but my observation of the way I see you work is that it really is inefficient. This is what I would recommend you do. Or, you know, we've had talks about you coming in late, and even 15 minutes will make a difference to how much you can get done by morning tea time.
Okay, stress claims and stress itself. Are we more stressed, or are we all victims and precious and just very fragile?
I think it's both, to be honest. At any point in time, you'll have 1 in 5 members of your workforce in a given year who are suffering from some form of mental illness.
But caused by the workplace?
Not necessarily caused by the workplace, but if they're unwell, they're unwell, and then any additional stresses from the workplace, while it may not be the workplace's fault, are going to exacerbate that person's stress.
So you're trying to tell me that 1 in 5 people in this radio station have got some form of mental illness on average?
Unless they're absolutely immune from all the studies done by the Australian Bureau of Statistics,
yes,
and the radio station is different, then...
Oh, we're different. We're special.
Well, either special, maybe the incidence is even higher.
So we might have 3 out of 5.
There might just be a culture of fear whereby they can't admit to anybody they're not travelling well. But some people will have mental illness in the form of stress. It may not have been a workplace injury, but the workplace inherits the problems inherent in that person's difficulties. Some of us are struggling with relationship issues. Some of us are trying to bring up kids in a difficult world and we're worried about our kids and our kids are acting out. Some people just aren't necessarily very resilient, and the sort of stuff that you and I might bounce back from is the sort of stuff that they won't. That's, again, not the workplace's fault. But the workplace has to deal with it. And that's why I think sometimes managers are really unlucky, because they're caught in the wrong place at the wrong time. They're doing everything right. 9 out of 10 of their people are responding well, and there's one person having it can't cope, who, because they're feeling genuine pressure, assumes that it's the manager or the organisation that's put too much on them, when in fact any reasonable bystander would say what's being asked of you is perfectly reasonable, you're just not dealing with it terribly well.
The people that have caused this stress and this anxiety, I wonder if they're faceless. And the reason I ask you that question is I've had this commented to me a number of times, not just in this place but in other places, by women that will say, I find it really difficult now because all the men tiptoe around me. They won't talk to me like a normal human being because they're fearful that they're going to say something and I'm going to go and report them to the boss.
That can be the case. I mean, some of these men are really, these days, a complaint waiting to happen.
And absolutely.
They really haven't adjusted to the times. So if you ask these poor blokes, are you nervous around particular individuals, whether it's someone of a racial minority or a
woman, whatever.
Or whatever, are you genuinely nervous and do you tiptoe around them? And they'll say, bloody oath, I do.
Yes.
But that's because if they open their mouths and said anything, they could really get themselves into trouble.
I know. But you know what? The women that have made that comment to me said that they feel uncomfortable now in the work environment because people can't be themselves.
Yeah, look, being themselves, I'm all for self-expression, but I think there have to be legitimate boundaries.
Oh, absolutely. You
know, some of those Aussie characters are saying, I want to do is just be able to tell it like it is. But they're behind the eight ball justifiably because they don't want to filter anything that they say. And the other thing you've touched on, which I think is really important, and that is the vast majority of women that I work with, either in male-dominated workplace or others, will say, I just want to be treated respectfully. I don't want to be special. I don't want to be different. I just want to be treated respectfully. You really have to get to know your people and you have to watch and listen for what's likely to offend and what's not. But we don't want to have to walk on eggshells around people.
No.
Generally, where there's smoke, there's fire, and the ones that are worried about putting their foot in it have probably done so 100 times before.
Yeah. Can I ask you the other thing before we let you go? Because I could talk to you all night, but unfortunately we're not allowed. How important is it to have a boss that you can talk to? And I say that to you, and if anybody's listening to this and they work here, they'll think, oh, here we go, he's crawling now. My immediate boss, all right, my program director here, you can actually talk to him, and you can have an open discussion with him, and he won't hold it against you. And I've had bosses like that in the past where you can sit down, you can have an open conversation with them, and it's not going to come back and bite you in the backside a week or a month or 6 months later. And I have to say to you, I think that's a good thing, isn't it, to have that honesty with your boss?
Absolutely. That is ultimately the best way you can safeguard against any grief in relation to sexual harassment, bullying claims. You know, if people are safe to go openly, honestly, and non-defensively to their boss, if the two of them can have a robust discussion, if someone doesn't actually throw that back in their face a day, a week, a month later, and the two of them can be real with each other, then the boss, because the boss cares and because the boss is empathic and trustworthy, you're not going to have someone slap a stress claim on you 6 months down the track like a bolt out of the blue because you've had ongoing discussions about how the person's going. The person knows the boss cares about them, and they're not going to mete out a punishment on the boss by laying it at the boss's feet when things get too hard. But it does mean the bosses have to foster an environment whereby people can come to them with anything, know the boss isn't punitive, but also expect the boss to ask them to do that reasonable day's work for reasonable day's pay.
Sure, but if you've got a boss that's weak and you've got a boss that is openly friendly with certain staff and not others, that causes a massive divide in any workplace.
Yeah, it breeds a lot of resentment and a lot of cynicism.
Yeah, too
any
right.
Any of that nepotism, any of that
old
boys or girls nepotism.
Yep.
We've got to do it better than that.
Good on you. Great to talk to you as always. Thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Murray. No problem.
Good on you. Leanne Faraday-Brash, organisational psychologist and author and founder of Brash Consulting. Google up Brash Consulting. You'll find out a lot of information about Leanne and what she does. What's it like in your workplace? I wonder, have you got that open environment where you can talk to your boss? You know, thankfully, you know, I'm in that situation now where you can talk to your boss. And, you know, some of the bosses I've had in the past, and they're just chronic. I mean, you can't talk to them because, you know, if you talk to them about a problem you might have, that may involve somebody that they're friends with, you know, and that comes back and bites you on the backside later on down the track. I haven't got that situation now, which I think is fantastic. But I've worked in other environments where it's alive and well. I mean, nepotism is just on the top of the list. And it's not good for any environment. It splits it. It's unhealthy. What type of environment have you got where you work? Can you go and talk to your boss freely, openly, have a chat, get it off your chest, and you know the next day everything's going to be fine. 13 13 32, that's our telephone number. This is 2UE.